looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Needham Bank, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuaid, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The 0-2. Hit on the ground is short. Backhanded by Bogarts, a long throw in time. Ball game over. Boston wins. So the Red Sox take a 2-1 lead in the best of five series as they beat the Yankees severely about the head and shoulders, winning 16-1.
So I just caught that for the first time. Beat Yankees severely above the head and shoulders. Is that what he said?
That's correct. That's what he said.
So what did he mean? That the Yankees played stupid last night? Is that what he's getting at?
I hope so.
Yeah, and you know what? He's right. John Sterling, play-by-play there. He's absolutely right. 617-779-0985 here in the Baseball Reporters. Let's open up the phone lines right away, Jimmy Stewart, our producer. If we could do that, we'll take your calls up until 7 o'clock. The Reds are now 1 win away from the American League Championship Series. If you were counting from the regular season, that's 110 wins. 110. And you know what? Sadly, and I'm not trying to let the air out of the balloon, but sadly, the first 110 don't matter. You need the next one. You need the next one. The next one is the one that matters. The next one eliminates New York, gets you into the American League Championship Series. The next one is the one that takes you to a place where you haven't been since 2013. It's the next win that matters. You haven't won anything yet. You really haven't. So look, here's what I'll tell you about that game last night in New York. Good showing by the Red Sox, and from a big picture perspective, here's what you can take out of it. That after nearly crumbling in game one, and then after getting smacked around in game two with David Price melting on the mound, the Red Sox went into New York last night against a Yankees team that has not lost at home in the postseason since the start of last year. And they kicked the ever-loving snot out of them. They absolutely kicked the snot out of them. Now, look, if you want to talk about individual achievements and you want to celebrate Brock Holt's cycle, have a blast. Honestly, I couldn't care less. I really could not care less about Brock Holt's cycle. But what I do care about is being up 2-1 in the American League Division Series, guaranteeing that now the series and season will come back to Boston for at least one more game, and that the Red Sox now are within 1 win of getting to the American League Championship Series for the first time in 5 years. And I say first time in 5 years, but you know what I mean. Advancing beyond the first round for the first time really with this group. Because that's what it's been. This group has failed in the first round over and over again here the last couple of years. 1-6 coming into this year, and they're now 2-1. And the Red Sox have not been behind the Yankees in the standings since June 26th. They were tied on July 2nd, but again last night, Boston went in front. So all of that, celebrate that. It was a dominating win, and you want to talk about winners and losers last night? Alex Cora, winner. Made lineup changes and got results. 8-for-18, Brock Holt, Christian Vasquez, Rafael Devers, they get in the lineup, they go 8-for-18. Alex Cora nails every decision, every single one. And you want to give credit, and I've beaten up on this guy a lot, Dave Dombrowski, tip of the hat last night. Nathan Eovaldi, big night. And that's Dombrowski's guy. A lot of people have been critical of Dombrowski for his inability or unwillingness to add bullpen help at that July 31st deadline, myself chief among them. What he sold us at the time was that they needed more help at second base, or they needed a second help at second base more than they needed a reliever, and they told us they needed a starter more than a reliever. And last night, boy, did Eovaldi deliver. 7 innings, dominant 7 innings against the Yankees in that ballpark. He's owned their ass this year. And as a result, you're up 2-1. Now, I don't know what Eovaldi's going to do going forward, but I know that last night was a big check mark for Dave Dombrowski. So again, just trying to tell it like it is. Okay, again, I didn't like the fact that they didn't have bullpen help. And if you really push me on it, I'll tell you they could have added Eovaldi, and they could have added bullpen help and not brought Kinsler here. I said that at the time. I'll say it again now. But if Eovaldi pitches well, then you at least have to look at Dombrowski and say, they nailed that one. They saw something in Eovaldi and in the matchup with New York. And Alex Speer wrote about this today on BostonGlobe.com, talking to pitching coach Dana Lavangi about how hard a matchup Eovaldi is for the Yankees, and they got it right. Boy, did he own the Yankees. And Eovaldi last night, no walks. No walks. The Yankees as a staff walked eight guys. And if you listen to this show, you know that's a big thing for me. Throw strikes, be aggressive. I think Porcello will be aggressive and throw strikes tonight. I don't know if he has the stuff to do what Eovaldi did, but he'll be aggressive and he'll throw strikes. As for the lineup, and this is important, Alex Cora basically went back to his guys. Or he's playing matchups again against CeCe Sabathia, left-hander. No Brock Holt in the lineup. No Rafael Devers in the lineup. Christian Vasquez is in to catch Porcello. And historically, Porcello likes to work with Sandy Leon. So, you know what? I'll tell you what, Jimmy Stewart. You know the catcher's ERA on Baseball Reference? If you could, look up Porcello this year with Vasquez versus with Leon at the end of his splits there and see if we can come up with it.
This is the first time that Vasquez has caught Porcello this year.
All year?
All year.
Okay, so
the last time that Vasquez caught Porcello was last year in the postseason, I believe.
Okay, so see, I don't love this, but I'm curious as to how fans think about it. I'd have had Holt in that game tonight, and not just because of the four hits last night. Notice that I didn't say cycle. not just because of the four hits. This is thing, Holt.
He's been hot for a month.
And also, Holt is, unlike Devers, Devers can be an easy out. He'll chase. He'll go out of the zone. He's been better lately. But Holt's a pain in the ass. He's like Brett Gardner. He's hard to pitch to. Even if you get him out four times, you're going to have to work for it. And so I'd have kept Holt in that game last night. Cora did not. You tell me as a fan, A, do you like that? And B, with the way Cora's gone, it's hard to second guess anything he's doing because this year he's nailed pretty much all of it. Nick's in Rhode Island. Nick, go ahead.
Hey, Tony. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I'll save you the conniption over talking about Brock Holt's cycle. I think it's ridiculous. I mean, I've talked to you about 30-30 for Mookie. I think it's garbage. Where the numbers thing doesn't do it for me. But what I wanted to get into was how Ron Darling, you mentioned earlier, kind of calling out the Red Sox for running up the score. First of all, it's a playoff game. I mean, throw it all out the window. That's not the narrative to take. You're not supposed to lay off the gas in the playoffs just because you're embarrassing the other team. And I wanted to call in just saying that it's more on the responsibility of, say, Aaron Boone for mismanaging A, Severino, B, bringing in Lance Lynn in a spot where he really couldn't perform clearly. And just, I don't know. I letting the other team run up 16 on you, I think that's more on you than it is the other team.
Yeah, Nick, listen, I was surprised Darling said it, honestly. And I know, you know, he's obviously from a different era, played in the 80s with the Mets, won a World Series with them, and was good in that World Series against the Red Sox, by the way. But I look at that whole thing with Darling, and I say, it's a playoff game. It's Yankee Stadium. You got all kinds of home run power on the other team. I'm not going to give the Red Sox grief for running up the score in a playoff game. That's the Yankees' problem if they get their asses kicked. But the way Holt talked about the cycle after the game, I just thought that that's taking your eye off the ball. I mean, what are we really celebrating? Are we celebrating the cycle, or should we be celebrating the fact that the Red Sox went into New York, did what no one has done in the last 2 years and won there on the road, and are now within one win of the championship series? The cycle, hearing Holt talk about it, I just felt, honestly, I thought it was tactless.
I'm assuming when you went up in the ninth against Romine that you knew you needed a home run for the cycle. And what was your mindset? What were you trying to do?
Well, obviously, yeah, I knew I needed a home run. You know, I saw Romine was on the mound, so you get a little antsy when a position player's on the mound. And, you know, I told everyone, get me up. I need a home run for a cycle. I was going to try to hit a home run. But I figured I'd ground out to first, be out in front of something. But I scooted up in the box a little bit, and I was going to be swinging at anything and try to hook anything, and obviously you don't expect to hit a home run, but I was trying to hit a home run. That's probably the first time I've ever tried to do that. And rounding the bases, seeing everybody going nuts in the dugout was a pretty cool moment for me. And like I said, tonight's this is something I'll remember for for a long, long time.
I mean, if it's a game-winning home run in a playoff game, I get it. I get it. But you win the game 16-1 and you're homer off a backup catcher and you're celebrating the cycle. I don't know, and I'm not making this up. It did bug me last night. I just felt like, good God, how about something to the effect of, hey, look, we've been in the division round a couple of times here. This is our third go-round. We haven't advanced past it yet. We're up 2-1. We still need one more game. That's all. We need one more game.
I'd expect that from an everyday player, but I don't know. This plays to his personality. He's a goofball. He's a bench guy. You know, he's enjoying the moment. I mean, I can understand where you're coming from because I heard Beadle talk about the same thing during the midday show today, too. And I can just understand it. Like, know the moment, maybe even lie if you have to. But I just think that's more or who Brock Holt actually is, the way he talked about it.
Yeah, I'd have lied about it if I were him. That's all. If I'm the Yankees next year, and I don't do it now because you're in a playoff series. Next year when Holt comes up, I drill him right in the kneecap. Hit him right in the kneecap. Or in the ass. The ribs. Whatever. Somewhere below the shoulders. I drill him. Because I just thought, really? That's what you're going to celebrate?
Baseball Reporters with Tony Mazz. 98.5 The Sports Hub. The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
There's no way. No way. The only time I've ever seen anything like this happen is a relief pitcher was starting a game and he would come down and just go through his normal, get his gun hot, go in the game. Starting pitchers, to Jack's point, at least a half hour before the game, you're in the outfield running, you're long tossing, then you make your way to the mound and gradually you build into it. There's no way you can go on a big league bullpen mound 8 minutes before the scheduled first pitch and expect to be ready.
John Flaherty, former Red Sox catcher, also caught for the Rays, Yankees, now an analyst on the YES Network, talking about that whole fiasco last night with Luis Severino, warming up 8 minutes before the game. I've never seen that either, but pitchers are odd ducks. Some of them have strange routines. And generally what Flaherty told you is what they do. They're out there a long time before, they long toss, they get loose, they stretch, then they get on the mound, then they get ready to pitch. All of that. Last night, Severino, and this goes back to a report during the game, that his warm-up routine started late. There were images of Larry Rothschild, the Yankee pitching coach, out there on the field with him last night, telling him the game started at 7:40, which suggesting that Severino was either late for the warm-up routine, or the more I think about it, late to the ballpark. He was probably late to the ballpark because if he got to the ballpark on time and was in the clubhouse, someone would have checked in with him. Someone would have said, okay, remember, you got to be out there. We're going out there at this time. And then he gets dressed and then you're out there. But if he shows up at the ballpark late, everything else gets rolled back. So the Yankees last night were all over the place. Severino sucked. Aaron Boone, I thought, talked around the Severino thing after the game. And then he was late getting Severino out of the game. out of the game. During that fourth inning when the Red Sox erupted for 7 runs, it was a 3-0 game with the bases loaded and nobody out. And then Severino got pulled. So first of all, Boone was late. And then secondly, given the artillery the Yankees have in their bullpen, David Robertson, Dellin Betances, or even Chad Green should have entered that game. You should be playing for strikeouts and pop-ups or infield grounders that allow you to get a force out of the plate, maybe turn a double play. You got to get out of that, keeping the game at 4, maybe 5-0, because with that Yankee offense, they can get back in the game. And in that ballpark, particularly with the way the Yankees hitters aim for that right field porch, right? That's a Yankees team that set a major league record for home runs. And yet Boone let the game get to 10-0. Boy, Aaron Boone screwed up royally last night. So did Severino. So did the pitching coach. All of it. I mean, that's a massive screw up in a game like that. Andy's in the car. Andy, what do you got?
Hey, man, how's it going? I just want to talk about discipline, just in the sense that you talked about this year with giving the Red Sox some credit on beating up bad teams and basically how that kind of paid off because the Yankees were never in the zone, never seemed disciplined. Boone never seemed to have them all the way locked in. And I think that showed last night.
Andy, listen, I couldn't agree with you more. I think what happened is the Yankees won game two, and all of a sudden they think we're going back home, we're good there, no problem, and they basically slapped it out there and said we can show up and win. And the Red Sox came out with a little edge in their game. Mookie Betts swung at the first pitch and hit it 405 feet, and it got caught, but the Red Sox were ready to go. There was a little more focus there on the Boston side. In these games at that level, that makes a difference. Rid is in Westford. Go ahead.
Hey, Miles. I really love your show. I wanted to talk about a take I heard on your TV show last night.
Sure, go.
After the game.
Yep.
So someone was saying, and you disagreed with it, to your credit, that Evaldi obviously looked really awesome last night, and he was nails, and Dombrowski looks good for getting him. The problem is that doesn't give him a pass for not getting any relief help at all. And I get that you can't replace all the guys, and they're all really horrible. But you can get one guy, and you get one guy for the eighth inning or something like that, and it totally changes the team. And then, like, the fourth inning last night, when they're starting to score all these runs, I'm thinking, oh, man, I hope they score enough, they score enough. And it never felt like enough until the very end of the game, obviously.
So yeah, Reid, I agree. And this is, look, they need a big cushion to win down there. And the segment you're talking about, I was on with Michael Hawley last night at NBC Sports Boston. And Hawley's standpoint or viewpoint is that the bullpen will not do the Red Sox in. If they lose, it won't be because of the bullpen. And I vehemently disagree. I don't know how you could rule that out at this stage. If they lose, the bullpen's probably going to be involved in one way, shape, or form. I mean, to me, there's just no way around that. That bullpen is shaky. And in game one, they needed a starter to get to the ninth inning. A starter had to come in game one. Think of that. Mike's in a car. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, hey, Tony. You know, during the season, I called in a couple of times, talked about the base running and how sloppy it was. And last night, I thought they did a great job on the base paths. They were appropriately aggressive. But one thing I wanted to throw out to you guys and ask you is, did you think Aaron Judge was favoring too far toward right center field? I felt like he was all over the place. And I know the guy's got a cannon for an arm, but he's not fast enough to make up for that.
Yeah, so Mike, I say no, and I'll tell you why. Because first of all, these guys have such data on all these positioning charts now that they have everything down to a science. Secondly, I would argue that in New York, more often than not, anything hitting the air down the line is going to go out. So there aren't going to be look, last night the ball, it felt like it was rattling around in that corner quite a bit. But I didn't think Judge's defense was a problem last night. To your first point about the base running, you're dead on. Okay, the base running was excellent last night for the Red Sox. And focus in the early part of the game when Mookie Betts went first to third on that Benintendi blooper into left field. He drew a throw and Benintendi went to second. And then there was a chopper, I think, off of Severino's hand. That I want to say it was Devers who hit that ball. But ultimately, the Red Sox got a run out of it. And it was largely because of their base running. So their base, for all the grief, again, we've given their base running early in the year. Last night, it was a plus for them. Okay, Dombrowski, last night, Evaldi, huge plus for Dombrowski. And Alex Cora, the manager of the Red Sox, gets second-guessed all the time. Cora, not so much this year, given the way the season went and given the way his decision-making went. Last night, he put three new guys in the lineup, and they went a combined 8-for-18 with 7 RBI and 6 runs scored. So Cora nailed it too. Now, it feels to me a little like Cora's pushing his luck tonight. He's got Kinsler back in there. He's got Vasquez in there, catching Porcello, by the way, for the first time all year. We'll give you some of the numbers on that here shortly. But it feels like he had a good thing going there with Holt. I don't know if I would have taken Holt out. But we'll see how it goes. Again, with the year Cora's had, it feels like he's nailing everything. Just a reminder, the Baseball Reporters Playoff Edition, presented by Budweiser. So thanks to our friends at Budweiser. Boston, this Bud's for you. Jim Murray's got your headlines, and then hopefully we're going to talk to a special guest when we come back.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporter with Tony Mazzarotta. Show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I just think attacking their hitters, that's the biggest thing. These guys they're very good hitters. They're very well coached. They have a solid approach. And if you fall behind guys, you give them the opportunity to see pitches in the strike zone. That's the only way you can get back into the count because they're disciplined. They don't chase a lot. I think attacking, being aggressive, and go from there.
That's Rick Porcello talking about his start tonight against the Yankees. I happen to agree with him. I think against this Yankee team, you got to be aggressive. You got to attack. And you have to throw fastballs in, fastballs up. Now, exactly what Nathan Eovaldi did last night. The difference is Eovaldi throws 98, 99, 100 miles an hour. Porcello doesn't throw that hard. Can he execute it the same way? I don't know. But to me, this whole week, these last couple of days, have been a fascinating study in sort of the psychology of pitching, particularly in big games. So I'll tell you what, I want to bring in someone that I think has lived through the highs and lows of pitching in Boston. Derek Lowe joins us now via telephone. Derek, I'm assuming you're at home somewhere out in the Midwest. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm actually in the beautiful state of Michigan where I grew up. I'm an official snowbird in Michigan, half the year in Florida. It's kind of embarrassing, but yeah, that's where I'm here.
Okay,
it's,
so
hot here today.
Well, so look, I mean, I'm sure you're following this series. I know you did work for the Red Sox, and watching what we've seen here over the last couple of days, aside from the stuff, okay, leave the stuff out. How is it that a guy like Nathan Eovaldi can go out and pitch like he did in a big spot and David Price continues to struggle? Why do some guys pitch well in big games and other guys don't?
That's a good question, and I figured that's where we're going to start out. I mean, nobody that feels worse than David Price. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, he understands his numbers. He's probably sick and tired of even during the middle of the year, even people are already asking him questions about, you know, what's happened in the postseason. You know what? I don't know. And I think that is the beauty of the postseason. I mean, that there's the random guys, like a Brock Holt last night. I mean, you're saying, okay, Mookie or JD, he's probably going to be series. And then there's a Brock Holt.
Okay, so Derek, I got to tell you what, I got to put you on hold because you're cutting in and out. We'll try to get back to him here if we get a better signal, so hopefully we can talk. I find this part of it interesting because honestly, Lowe lived through both. I mean, Lowe lived through highs and lows of Boston. There were moments where he pitched well in big spots and other moments where he didn't. And so I want to know from his standpoint, what was the difference and whether, you know, how much of it is confidence, I guess is what I'm getting at. In the interim, Tim's in Sterling. Tim, what do you got?
Yeah, Tony, talk about the Price. I mean, we need an intervention with him. Maybe if Pedro's in town, bring Pedro in and just teach him how to pitch mean instead of fearful. Just watching his pitches, where they're at. He's afraid to pitch. We need to I'll quote you. You said, grow a sack. You said that last night. You probably deny it, but you actually did. And I think he needs that. And I think we need to, if we're going to get past the Yankees and then past Houston for sure, we need Price to pitch like a man. We need to step up.
Okay. So look, I just don't like the approach with him, Tim. I feel like he tries to finesse it. And so, Jimmy, we have Lowe back now. So, Derek, are you there? I guess what I'm saying, how much of it in a big spot? Because let me give you an example as it pertains to your career. Okay. Now, some of it's probably experience, but early in your career, and it was what, 99, you came in relief in Cleveland in that final game, right? Yeah. And you had a hard time.
Correct.
And then in 2004, you pitched game 7 in New York on 2 days of rest, and I think through 6 shutout innings.
Correct.
So
you're good. You're
okay.
Your agent. Yeah.
So how fine is that lineup? What was the difference for you? Why were you able to excel in New York in game 7 but not in Cleveland in game 5 years earlier?
Maz, I can honestly God in this situation, I can only really literally speak for myself. Like, I always wanted to be that guy. Like, I wanted the ball. I hated watching. I wanted to be the, even though if we had, you know, we had Pedro and Schilling and Wake and Bronson, I just always was always that guy since I was a kid or whatever. Just give me the ball. I love the atmosphere. I love the intensity. You know, I never thought about, man, this is a big game. What if I fail in game 7? That's just the arena that I loved being in. Now, yes, you're going to fail, but I think it's a mentality of wanting to be the guy, not being a fear of failure.
Did you have the same mentality in 99 that you did in 04?
Yes. And I think for me, I love the city of Boston. I mean, I said this 1,000 times. I mean, it either makes you better or worse, but you're not going to stay the same. For me, it motivated me and drove me every day to be a better pitcher. But I mean, I don't really. First of all, I know David very little. I met him in spring training this year. You know, I think it's, you know, you hear there's a lot of choice words. I mean, tough words to get thrown at him. But I know it's. But until you do it, until you know, go out there and get victories. I mean, that's the only way you're going to, you know, stop the critics.
Yes,
and hopefully, Rick Parcello pitches another beauty tonight. the questions are going to linger on to the next round.
So look, Derek, in all honesty, I don't know Price all that well either. I don't. I mean, I don't know him at all. I mean, I think I interviewed him once or twice in a group setting when I was, you know, still covering the team, yeah. Covering baseball. I don't do that anymore. I'm not looking to bury the guy. Okay. I mean, I get frustrated as much as anyone else does watching him in these big spots. I'm just more interested in the, you know, in the psychology of it. Because you watch a guy like Eovaldi on the mound, and he looks calm, and he's whipping it up there. He's airing it out. He looks like he doesn't have a worry in the world. And Price looks anxious out there. And, you know, to me, was that something, you know, is poise on the mound in a big spot something you can learn, or do you think it's more innate?
But I think if you look at it, if you look at a David Price, or, like, if you could get into his head, I mean, I would imagine there's, if you, I mean, I don't even know what his record is. Believe me, I don't know if he's won a start or what have you.
He hasn't.
But I mean, if you've never really had tremendous amount of success, on what do you lean on? Like every thought maybe you have in your mind is negative. I mean, in Fenway Park, they're booing after the first two hits because they're kind of had these expectations. I mean, you can look as calm as you want on the outside, but I mean, it's tough. I mean, if you're a hitter and you're 0 for 24 and you keep telling people, I feel great at the plate, you know, until you start having success to change your own mindset, to change your perception, it's, again, and then you said, like, last night, Nathan Eovaldi, you know, I come back from major elbow surgery a couple years ago, throwing 100 miles an hour, 10-run lead doesn't hurt, don't get me wrong, but, I mean, he pitched beautifully in the first couple innings, But you need David. I mean, I think that's the thing about the Red Sox is you definitely need him to be the frontline starter that he could be to get to a World Series and finally win one. I shouldn't say finally win another one.
Okay, I want to get to Porcello, too, because I know you had a little bit of a relationship with him in spring training. But before we do that, in the bigger picture, Price has lived an up-and-down existence here in Boston, as you know. Maybe it's down and up more than up and down. But whatever it is, it's been tumultuous. You yourself had some hard times here. I remember them, and I know you do, too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so, but was there ever a time where you said, you know what, I got to get out of here. I can't pitch here. I don't want to pitch here.
No, I never. And, you know, I learned very, very early on from, you know, group mentors that in the city of Boston, and, you know, I always started doing my damnedest. You got to take responsibility. You can't blame fingers. You can't do this. Because once you start doing that, the merry-go-round is going to go around and around in a negative way. So I always get to try to, you know, be self-accountable. But, again, the city drives you to be better because there's, you know, the media pressure's there. You know, the fan base is phenomenal. So, again, it was but never once. I mean, never once I ever want to get out of there. I mean, yeah, certain days, but not like in the totality of the season. At the end of the off season, say I want out. It's just a great place. And again, I mean, it's not for everybody. I mean, I know we were just talking about David. I'm not clumping him into that by any means. I mean, there's been many guys you've covered that, you know, they just didn't last very long here.
Okay, so let me ask you about Porcello now. You worked with him in spring training, and it feels like he has gone from, you know, bad year to good year to bad year, and this year was sort of a combination of the two, but he started out great. What's the essence of your relationship with him? What have you talked to him about? What was the whole connection there? And I'm assuming the team asked you to get involved there. Why?
Yeah, I met him. I met him in the Red Sox Fan Fest this offseason. And he kind of came up to me and we were just shooting the breeze about throwing sinkers, what have you. And I said, you know, I live in Fort Myers. I said, yes. He said, would you be, you know, interested in coming and kind of watching me? Well, Dino Evangie and I have a pitching coach who have known each other forever.
Sure.
So I kind of reached out to him, and he said we'd love to have you come every day. Every day he threw a bullpen. So I went every day when he threw a bullpen. You know, we golfed a few times. You know, just talked about mechanics and talked about where he was on the rubber and why he was in a certain place. He's a very intelligent guy, and so I always felt like if I came to him with something, you know, you had to have a reason why. It was like you're trying to make whole set of changes. But, you know, the good thing was to me, listen, you know, who do you want to be? Do you want to be a four-seam guy? Do you want to be a two-seam guy? You know, I know this game is different now. You know, there's a lot more four-seam guys. But to make a long story short, so I talked to him probably throughout the first five or six starts. I'd go on vacation. Basically, my life kind of got screwed so we didn't talk as much. But, you know, we've been in contact here in the last couple, two, 3 weeks. So it's been a great relationship. You know, he's like I said, he's been fun to watch. But, I mean, he understands this Yankee lineup through and throughout. He understands, like I heard his interview about being aggressive and, you know, being able to attack the strike zone. Don't let these guys be able to dictate what you're throwing. But I look forward to it. About an hour away, it should be good.
Well, look, he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy, Derek, that's going to be psyched out by it. I mean, he might have a good game, he might have a bad one, but I feel like mentally he can handle it. You know, I suspect you feel the same way. I mean, I don't think, my guess is that you're not going to doubt his ability to handle that. But
no,
I do.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I do want to ask you before we let you go, the challenge of pitching in New York. Okay, particularly with in a big game and a tight game in the late innings, someone like me looks at it and says, "Man, those are the last 6 to 9 outs at Yankee Stadium are the toughest outs in baseball in a big game." Do people like me overstate that, or is it different pitching there?
I mean, you can't. You're 100% correct. I mean, I remember how short the old ballpark was, the old Yankee Stadium. I mean, this ballpark's even shorter, and so you got those mammoth guys in the middle of the lineup, and you can make beautiful pitches, and they hit it 305 feet down the line, it's a home run. But the pressure and what people can't really hear on TV is how loud it is, the intensity, and you feel it every single pitch. There's nothing like the Red Sox Yankee rivalry. So when people it's just another. No, it's not. It's another save. It's just not another seventh or eighth inning. There's nothing like it, and guys will tell you that, and if not, they're lying. But, yeah, especially today when you get the judges and the Stantons in that short porch and ride, it makes it extremely tough.
All right, Derek, listen, don't be a stranger.
I won't.
Don't be a stranger. Maybe we'll catch up with you later in the postseason if it works out well.
Yeah, hopefully you don't see me, but I'm supposed to throw out the first pitch Thursday. It gets to game 5, so hopefully you won't see me.
Yeah, down and away is the way to go. I'll talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, Derek Lowe, again, obviously won that Game 7 in New York in 2004. I just think that, you know, again, talk about a guy who lived the ups and downs. Holy crap. Nobody may be more so than Lowe.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.